Hare Krishna. I want to thank everybody for coming today. Any visitors and, of course, all of our familiar devotees. When I left home, it was 110 heat index, so a little austerity coming out today. And be able to chant in front of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and hear his words of the Bhagavad Gita. I'm going to be reading from 435, Chapter of Transcendental Knowledge. I guess it's up there. I'll just read it through once, then maybe a couple people can chant. Yajgyatva nupanar moham evam yasyasi pandava yena bhutanya sheshani drakshasyatmanyato mayi. Others? Ladies. Let's go to the translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Translation: having obtained real knowledge from a self-realized soul, you will never fall again into such illusion, for by this knowledge you will see that all living beings are but part of the Supreme, or in other words, that they are mine. Purport: the result of receiving knowledge from a self-realized soul, or one who knows things as they are, is learning that all living beings are part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. The sense of an existence separate from Krishna is called Maya. Some think that we have nothing to do with Krishna, that Krishna is only a great historical personality, and the Absolute is the impersonal Brahman. Factually, it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, this impersonal Brahman is the personal effulgence of Krishna. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the cause of everything. In the Brahma Samhita, it is clearly stated that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes. Even the millions of incarnations are only his different expansions. Similarly, the living entities are also expansions of Krishna. The Mayavadi philosophers wrongly think that Krishna loses his separate existence in his many expansions. This thought is material in nature. We have experienced in the material world that a thing, when fragmentally distributed, loses its own original identity. But the Mayavadi philosophers fail to understand that absolute means that 1 plus 1 is equal to 1, and that 1 minus 1 is also equal to 1. This is the case in the absolute world. For want of sufficient knowledge in the absolute science, we are now covered with illusion. And therefore, we think that we are separate from Krishna. Although we are separated parts of Krishna, we are nevertheless not different from him. The bodily difference of the living entities is Maya, or not actual fact. We are all meant to satisfy Krishna. By Maya alone, Arjuna thought that the temporary bodily relationship with his kinsman was more important than his eternal spiritual relationship with Krishna. The whole teaching of the Gita is targeted towards this end, that a living being as Krishna's eternal servitor cannot be separated from Krishna, and his sense of being an identity apart from Krishna is called Maya. The living entities as separate part and parcels of the Supreme have a purpose to fulfill. Having forgotten that purpose since time immemorial, they are situated in different bodies, as men, animals, demigods, etc. Such bodily differences arise from forgetfulness of the transcendental service of the Lord. But when one is engaged in transcendental service through Krishna consciousness, one becomes at once liberated from this illusion. One can acquire such pure knowledge only from the bona fide spiritual master, and thereby avoid the delusion that the living entity is equal to Krishna. Perfect knowledge is that the Supreme Soul, Krishna, is the supreme shelter of all living entities, and giving up such shelter, the living entities are deluded by the material energy, imagining themselves to have a separate identity. Thus, under the different standards of material identity, they become forgetful of Krishna. When, however, such deluded living entities become situated in Krishna consciousness, it is to be understood that they are on the path of liberation, as confirmed in the Bhagavatam 2.10.6, Muktir Yadgan Yata Rupam Sarupena Vyavastiti. Liberation means to be situated in one's constitutional position as an eternal servitor of Krishna, Krishna consciousness. Om Gyana Devanandisha Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshur Mitamina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Vanchakopa Tribhischa Kripa Sindhu Bhavicha Patitano Pavane Bhyo Vaishnavi Mo Namaha. So in this purport, Srila Prabhupada says, the living beings as separate part and parcels of the Supreme have a purpose to fulfill. So I usually put a title on the lectures, at least on the Sunday feast lectures and other classes, and I was going to entitle this, The Purpose of Life. When I told that to Mother Mukha, she thought that was a little odd, didn't want to know. And it did occur to me, it sounds a little arrogant, doesn't it? You know, we're going to tell you about the purpose of life. But actually, it is a fact. And Srila Prabhupada is telling us in this purport that we do have a purpose in life. We as living entities are not simply adrift in this vast material world without cause, without purpose, without meaning. But that there is a real meaning and purpose to our life. And the Bhagavad Gita, on every page of this incredible spiritual document, is giving us that purpose. So intelligent people inquire about the purpose of life. We might ask, what is our purpose? What is my personal purpose on earth? Why am I here? And how do I put my life's purpose into action? If there is such a meaning or purpose, how do I realize it, and how do I act accordingly? So there are two aspects to the understanding that's given in this very, very wonderful purport of Srila Prabhupada's about the understanding of the position of the living entity in relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And of course, this philosophy is known as a Chintabheda Tattva, and was promulgated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is on our altar on the left side, for those of you who are not familiar. 500 years ago, he taught this very incredibly sublime philosophy, which was the culmination of many branches and many different lines and specific successions of Vaishnav philosophy, distilling the essence of all the Vedic literatures and all Vaishnav philosophy. He gave us this philosophy of Achintabheda-bheda-tattva, which means inconceivable simultaneous oneness and difference. So how do we understand that in relationship to understanding the living entity? First of all, we understand that we are, in one sense, not separate from God. This point is made in this purport, that our purpose is not separate. One needs to be in alignment with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with His will. And of course, we understand that that is a relationship of service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and to the spiritual master. And that's very strongly emphasized. But at the same time, we're also hearing that we are separate, eternal, living entities. So we are separate from Krishna. We all have individuality. We have free will. We have an identity. That identity is eternal. It's an identity that goes beyond this body. It goes beyond this mind. It goes beyond the intelligence. It goes beyond this lifetime. But it's there eternally. It's called our constitutional position, our Sarup Dharma, our Sanatan Dharma. And that constitutional position is of a pure spirit soul who has a pure relationship of loving, devotional service with Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we understand that each of us has a unique relationship with Krishna and we have free will. Now, why do we say that? Free will is absolutely essential in a loving relationship. You cannot have love without freedom, right? Otherwise, it's simply tyranny or someone is forcing one. So you can't say, you must love me. It doesn't work that way. So in the same way, Krishna gives this minute amount of independence to the living entity so that we can freely love him. Of course, we also, because of that free will, also have the choice not to. And that's what got us in trouble here. That's what brought us to this material world, the misuse of the exercise of free will. Now, of course, in this material world, we can understand that all living entities who are in this material plane of existence have misused that free will. We have all decided to become independent of Krishna, not to directly serve and to love Krishna, but try to see how this is going to work on our own. Maybe I could be the supreme. Maybe I can be in control. Maybe I can be the enjoyer of everything that there is to offer. Now, many of us who have had some experience realize that that hasn't worked very well. There must be a better plan for the living entity. But that is the modern concept. The modern concept is that that we are all very free, we are individual, we all make our own decisions, and that my life is very unique. This individualism is particularly strong in the Western world. Those of you who have studied sociology have probably heard these terms of collectivist societies and individualistic societies, and especially the Western world, very individualistic. You know, founded on the idea of rugged individualism, the people that went out and won the West and conquered, you know, new ground and new territories and like that. So, you know, this is very strongly within this particular culture. Less strong in other cultures, such as India and in Asia, you know, not quite as strong, but still there in all living entities to some degree or another. And so because we have this individualism, we think that our life is unique and everything that happens is based upon me. This is called egocentrism. I mentioned this a few years ago, but I figured I could revive it again. I haven't talked about this for a while. There's in developmental psychology, there was a principle called adolescent egocentrism. It's an offshoot of the work of Eric Erickson. Some of you may know him, and this was formulated by a psychologist named James Marcia. I'm just, being an academic, I'm just used to, quote, giving your sources so you're not plagiarizing, so I'm just letting you know this isn't my idea. Okay. Anyway, they came up with that there were three parts to this idea of adolescent egocentrism, and it tends to be prominent in those teenager adolescent years as identity formation is coming about and young people are struggling for their find out who they are. But I would contend that these apply to almost all living entities of all ages in the material world. So first of all, they talk about the invincibility fable. In other words, the tendency to think, I will live forever. I remember I used to think about this, that, you know, if I was in a bus or a train or a plane and it crashed and everybody died, I would live, right? I mean, this is part of the illusion that we have in this material world. Somehow, I am immortal. I am invincible. And, of course, Maharaj Yudhisthira said that this is the most wonderful thing. When he was questioned by Yamaraj, what is the most wonderful thing in this world? Maharaj Yudhisthira said, what is most wonderful is that I see that my relatives are dying, my family is dying, everyone around me is dying, but yet I think I will live forever. This is the illusion of living entity. And of course, it's there because there is a grain of reality. The grain of truth is that we are eternal, we are immortal, but of course, that is the soul that is within, not the gross body. But because for lack of knowledge, for want of understanding of the nature of the soul, this conception of eternity, which we all feel within us, gets transported and projected onto the material body. So we think, because I have this desire for immortality, it must be that this body will live. And therefore, people go to great lengths to maintain the body, to preserve the body, to somehow or another fight for survival. And every living entity. We see every species of life, this hard struggle for survival is there. So that's there. The second aspect of this adolescent egocentrism is called the imaginary audience, which means everybody's looking at me. I'm the center. Everybody notices me. Whatever I do is so important. Of course, to some degree, this is true. People are rather nosy and inquisitive, and they do mind everybody else's business. But we are not the center of everybody's attention, well, even though we may think we are. And the third is called the personal fable. I thought this was interesting. This is the concept that people think that my life is unique. It is glorious. It's like there's an epic movie going on, the story of me, you know. And nobody's experienced what I've experienced. My feelings are different from everybody else's feelings. I have this unique understanding, perception, unique experiences in life that nobody in the last million years has possibly ever experienced and understood. As I said, this is very typical of adolescence. And in fact, unfortunately, that's why there's such a high suicide rate amongst adolescents, because, you know, girlfriend breaks up with me, and I think nobody's ever experienced the depths of anguish that I am now experiencing, when, of course, it happens every day. But because of that lack of maturity and lack of understanding, it can be taken very, very seriously. Now, again, there's a grain of truth. We are all unique individuals, and we do have a unique life and a unique experience. And our sojourn through this material world and hopefully back to the spiritual world is unique, because we are individual spirit souls with our individual relationship with Krishna. But the point is, it's not based upon this one lifetime bodily experience. Because my particular experience in this lifetime is a lot like several other billion people have experienced. You know, we tend to have a certain commonality of life experience that's there. I mean, even though there are so many unlimited combinations of three modes of material nature, and there is a limit. I mean, there's only so many permutations and combinations of the three modes of nature that more or less define most life forms and most experiences within this material world. So it's actually fairly predictable. But the soul experiences its life as unique, because it is. So another aspect of this egocentrism is that we tend to see everything from our own experience, from my perspective. So when people are confronted with the idea of spiritual life and who is God, what is the nature of God, you know, they tend to see it in terms of me. Do I experience God? Show me God. If there's God, then I must be able to experience it. Otherwise, what value would he be? Because it's all centered around myself and my own experience. But of course, that's the limitation of our experience. Our experience is limited to this material world, to these material senses, to the material mind, intelligence, and ego. It's limited to very imperfect senses and very imperfect mental and intellectual processes. So we are not so easy to be able to see God. Prabhupada said we must have purified eyes to see God, not this material vision. This material vision is so limited. We all know, at least we believe, that there are atoms. Have you ever seen an atom? I guess maybe some electronic microscope, it's possible, but I've never seen an atom, but I believe they're there. Actually, I believe they're there because the Srimad Bhagavatam talks about atoms. In fact, in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, as well as the Brahma Samhita, atoms are described. This knowledge was there thousands of years ago by the ancient sadhus and saints in India. So that knowledge is there. We know that there are many far planets and stars. We can't see them, but yet we understand they're there. We don't see radio waves or television waves. There's so many things. How does your cell phone work? How do you get the internet on your cell phone? That's practically mystic power, isn't it? When you think about, you know, how does that actually happen? So there's so many things that we experience, even in this material world, which are completely beyond our ability to understand, our ability to see or to perceive, with the limitations of our senses and intellectual capacities. But yet, we know from higher authority that they're there. So in the same way, as we understand from those who are more knowledgeable about how things work in this material world, we have to take that same direction from those who are knowledgeable about spiritual life. And therefore, it's mentioned in this prayer part by Srila Prabhupada, and actually in this very verse, it says one must obtain real knowledge from a self-realized soul. Then one will never fall into illusion. So it's when knowledge is imparted by the spiritual master, when that knowledge comes from the guru, who is the pure representative of God, then one can actually understand spiritual life. So again, we have to purify these eyes, and we do so in a way that Srila Prabhupada described. This is on a lecture of Bhagavad Gita 10.1. Srila Prabhupada said that we had to act so that Krishna will see you. He said, we have to cultivate such practice in Krishna consciousness that we may become dear to God. My spiritual master used to say, you do not try to see God, just act in such a way that God will see you. If I want to see God, I make God my order supplier. Please come and I will see you. That is not so good. God is not so small that once I call him and he'll come. No. We have to qualify ourselves. Therefore, by your qualification, God himself will come and see you. So that's the whole secret to spiritual life. It's actually qualifying ourselves, purifying ourselves in such a way that God will reveal himself to us. Now, that doesn't mean that necessarily Krishna is going to walk down from the altar and reveal himself to us immediately, but still, that understanding, realization comes about through the heart, is given to us directly by Krishna and by the spiritual master when we please them by our service. So we do have to understand that we are fairly insignificant in this cosmic scheme. There are countless billions of living entities. We have gone through many, many lifetimes and 8,400,000 species of life in this material world. These particular body that I have that I'm so attached to and so proud of in so many ways is simply temporary and illusory. And it will soon pass. And for many of us, we realize the time being in this body is becoming shorter and shorter. And so it behooves us to understand our real spiritual nature, because there's not a lot of good prospects for being too attached to this body once you reach a certain age. It fails you. It becomes, again, the body is described as a fallible soldier. The relatives are fallible soldiers. Everything that we count on will simply fail us in the end. So we have to understand that our identity, apart from Krishna, of thinking that we are these bodies, is illusion. And our purpose and our mission is to break that illusory conception of life, to understand our real purpose in life as a spiritual being, as the pure spirit soul, and realize our relationship with God. Then we become free from this material world. So, it's to describe the real identity of the living entity, Jivera Sarubhaya Krishnara Nichidas, that the jiva, the living entity, is Krishnara Nichidas, the eternal servant of God. And we understand that process through the process of bhakti yoga. We through chanting Hare Krishna, hearing the scriptures, taking prasadam, engaging in the 9 processes of bhakti, of devotional service, we begin to break the identification with the body and understand our real nature as soul, our real nature in relationship with Krishna. So in the Padma Purana it says, therefore material senses cannot appreciate Krishna's holy name, form, qualities, and pastimes. When a conditioned soul is awakened to Krishna consciousness and renders service by using his tongue to chant the Lord's holy name and to taste the remnants of the Lord's food, which we'll be doing in a few minutes, the tongue is purified, and one gradually comes to understand who Krishna really is. The process is given here, beginning with the tongue, chanting Hare Krishna, taking prasadam. The idea is that we engage all of our senses in the service of Krishna, and therefore the senses become purified. Bhagavad Gita 9:27 says, Yat kuroshi yat ashnasi yat jahosi didasi yat yat tapashyasi kuntaya tad kurushvashamadarpana. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. So we don't ask people to do something unnatural, abnormal, something that is totally foreign to them. In one sense, sometimes people think that what we do in this Krishna conscious movement as Hare Krishna devotees seems kind of foreign or strange, maybe the way we dress or things like that. But actually, it is not foreign and strange, it is natural. The activities of Krishna consciousness are to engage everything that we do normally, all of the activities of the body and the senses, but do them for Krishna. This is sometimes called dovetailing. Whatever you do normally, naturally, do it for Krishna. Prabhupada used this term a lot of dovetailing. You know what that means? It's a woodworking term where you make a corner and you cut, and the two go together to form a corner. That's called a dovetail joint. And that's where the word comes from. And so what you're doing, in the same way that you're making a very, very strong connection between those two pieces of wood, by dovetailing our desires and our senses in Krishna consciousness with the desires and the senses of Krishna, we're making a very strong bond with Krishna, and thus purifying our heart and pleasing Krishna by our devotional service. So in the beginning, we do what we like to do, we do what we want to do, we do it for Krishna. As one becomes more advanced, mentality changes a little bit. Spiritual advancement means that I change the mentality from first doing what I want to do, to next doing what I want to do but doing for Krishna, to then eventually just doing what Krishna wants. Doing what Krishna wants me to do, what my spiritual master wants me to do. Aligning my desires with Krishna. And the result is that we only gain from that. The result is that we experience a much deeper happiness and fulfillment in following the desires of God and understanding God's desires through the guru, through the spiritual master. When one does that, there's an incredible spiritual happiness and peace that comes about. So one does not lose. It's not that one gives up one's sense of self, that one gives up one's own initiative and somehow becomes like a slave or a servant. Rather, one realizes one's actual identity and becomes happy in that service. Because it is only with that original relationship with God, when that's restored, that we become happy again. Everything else is simply temporary and illusory. It will not fulfill us in that real happiness. So, as we advance, make progress in spiritual life, we need to discover what is the desire of God. What is it that Krishna, God, wants from us? Now, fortunately, we don't have to speculate too much on that and go to great lengths and, you know, climb Himalayan peaks or perform severe austerities to somehow expect a blinding flash of light. Someday God will reveal what he wants from us. I mean, it's possible, but I think it'd be very difficult for most of us. Fortunately, Krishna gives us that information. He tells us his desires by the medium of the spiritual master. The spiritual master understands what is God's desire and is able to impart that knowledge to us. So in our particular situation in this International Society for Krishna Consciousness, as followers of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, we simply need to understand what is Srila Prabhupada's desire for us, because he is perfectly reflecting the desire of Krishna. And through many, many years of experience, those of us who are disciples of Srila Prabhupada and others who have followed Srila Prabhupada after Srila Prabhupada's departure some 35 years ago, have deeper and deeper realization of how Srila Prabhupada's teachings and the understanding of his words and his actions, his behavior, his instruction to us have been completely 100% accurate, on target, and have worked if we simply try to follow him very, very closely without deviation. So Srila Prabhupada, of course, came with a mission. His mission was not something that he created or concocted. His mission came from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to spread the teaching of the teachings of Lord Krishna and the chanting of the holy name to every town and village throughout the world. This was Krishna's desire. Therefore, the line of spiritual masters and acharyas, they take up that mission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as their life and soul. Srila Prabhupada was also given that mission by his guru, his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. He specifically instructed him, "You're an intelligent young man many, many years ago. You are able to speak the English language. You're educated. Now go to the West and spread this teaching of Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking world." Srila Prabhupada meditated upon that instruction for many, many, many years, until at the very late age of about 69 years old, finally embarked on a steamship to America. We all know the story. And Srila Prabhupada did not only bring this Krishna conscious movement and this philosophy from India that was written in Sanskrit language. Not only did he translate these works into English and bring them to America and the English-speaking worlds, he brought them to many, many other languages and many, many other countries throughout the world. So now these books of Srila Prabhupada are translated into, does anybody know the latest count? 140, 150 languages. Every year, different BBTs around the world are coming out with new translations into different languages of these books of Srila Prabhupada. So Srila Prabhupada gloriously fulfilled the mission of his spiritual master. So, of course, we are part of that mission. We are followers of Srila Prabhupada. And we try to take part in that preaching mission, each in our own unique way. Because while we have a common purpose, we have a common understanding and a common philosophy that we all adhere to and which unites us, at the same time, we are all unique individuals. And each unique individual has their own special purpose and their own special mission to fulfill. And that's what we each need to find out. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.7, in some of Lord Brahma's very, very famous and wonderful prayers to Lord Krishna, is one very, very nice purport that I like and I quote a lot, probably too much. But this is a quotation from Srila Sanatana Goswami's purport on this verse. Srila Sanatana Goswami further explains that the Lord manifests a specific spiritual quality for the benefit of each living entity. Since there are innumerable living entities within the confines of the material creation, the Lord manifests infinite qualities. Thus, every conditioned soul can appreciate the Supreme Lord in a particular way. I found this quite remarkable, because it's saying not only is each one of us a unique individual with a unique individual relationship with Krishna, but Krishna also, in reciprocation, manifests a unique manifestation of himself, his own particular, variety of personality, which is totally unlimited, for each living entity. So we all have that unique relationship with Krishna, and we all need to serve Krishna according to our individual relationship. Now, of course, the very nature of that ultimate individual relationship, we don't know so much now. When we become very advanced, Krishna will reveal that to us. But we do know our relationship with Krishna in relationship to Srila Prabhupada and our spiritual master, because that is given to us. We know the instructions, the directions, the activities and behaviors that we need to perform to be able to reunite with Krishna and to gradually become purified and understand Krishna and strengthen our relationship with him. Very famous letter to Karandar in December 1972. I'm just going to read a little part of it. It's quite lengthy. Prabhupada said, "There must always be individual striving and work and responsibility, competitive spirit, Not that one shall dominate and distribute benefits to the others, and they do nothing but beg for you and provide. And Prabhupada went on in his letter to emphasize the unique, individual, spontaneous service of each devotee. But then he also balanced that idea in this letter as well. He also mentioned the whole problem is that they are not following the regular principles that I can detect. Without this, enthusiasm will be lacking. So in other words, to be able to have this individual enthusiastic spirit of serving Krishna, there must be following the practices and principles of sadhana bhakti. He says, even if one is mechanically following, if he gradually gets understanding from the classes, he will come to the point of spontaneous enthusiasm. So in other words, as we perform vaidhi bhakti, the regular principles of devotional service, this leads automatically to the spontaneous level after some period of time. There's no particular time frame. It may be years. It could be a short period of time. The spontaneous loving devotional service is not so easy matter, but if one simply sticks to the rules and regulations like rising early, chanting 16 rounds, chanting Gayatri, keeping always clean, then his enthusiasm will grow more and more. And if there's also patience and determination, right, these are the principles given in Nectar of Instruction. There must be enthusiasm, patience, determination. One day he will come to the platform of spontaneous devotion, and then his life will be perfect. So each one of us needs to be an independently thoughtful devotee and try to understand how we can fulfill the mission and desires of Srila Prabhupada. And we need to have that personal sense of mission. Of what can I do? How do I use whatever is uniquely me to contribute to this great mission of Krishna consciousness? And as we fulfill that personal purpose, we fulfill the greater purpose of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the past acharyas. And we will find that real happiness comes when we are serving something beyond ourselves. Many, many people are looking for happiness, devotees, non-devotees. Everyone is looking for happiness. The irony of finding happiness is to look beyond oneself. When we are serving others, and ultimately when we are serving Krishna, that is when we become happy. So we need to strive for that service, serving the mission of Srila Prabhupada. We need to challenge ourselves, stretch ourselves a little bit in that service. And we will find that it will be infinitely rewarding to us. And we'll understand our relationship with Krishna and the spiritual master. As is described, that will be revealed to us simply by taking up this process of Krishna consciousness, very carefully following the instructions of the guru, the spiritual master, and again reestablishing that relationship of loving devotion with the supreme personality of Godhead. Thank you very much. Should probably end at this point. Is there a question or a comment from anybody we could take? Balavanta.
I don't know the translation of this, but I remember the original translation, which is, and when you have thus learned the truth, you will know that all living beings are my parts and parcels, and they are in me and are mine. Mm-hmm. And so you gave some nice examples, and it triggered some memories of mine of things that Prabhupada had said in the past, how we are within Krishna and how we belong to Him. Mm-hmm. There is many incarnations or expansions, plenary expansions, you know, infinite Vishnu expansions as there are waves on the ocean, and there are infinite numbers of living beings for each infinite expansion, and everyone is completely numbered. Krishna knows every leaf on every tree on every planet and every universe. He knows every hair on the head of every individual being, whether it's a dog or a human being or an ape. He knows all these things. He's conscious of them. and we are within him, and we are his. So we have nothing. Sometimes I feel proud that, you know, okay, Krishna, I'm offering you this. Krishna, I'm bringing you this, as though I'm doing something. But actually, I have nothing to give Krishna except my love. So as individual jiva souls, he is the inconceivable infinite, and we are just, he has expanded into tiny infinitesimals just to exchange love. And so the only thing we possess is our love. So we are his, and not only am I his, but all the living beings around me are his. So if I try to lord it over or enjoy somehow the adoration or the respect or whatever I would try to get from a living being, I'm taking what's Krishna's. So it's just such a deep understanding that you described with Lord Chaitanya's philosophy, Achinta Beta Abeta Tattva, from this verse. If we just hear from the spiritual master, and we can understand these things, but if we can just gradually realize the infiniteness of Krishna, the infinitesimalness of ourselves, and surrender to him and love him, then, as you say, we've reached the purpose of life.
Thank you very much. Thank That's very, very nice deep and inspiring. Discussion. I really appreciate your, right. your adding to the class. Someone else like to add something? Okay. Well, let's take Prashadam then. All glories to Śrīla Prabhupāda.